He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and I'm here alone. Jay, my sometimes co-host, is driving a client's Jeep Grand Cherokee from California to Connecticut as I speak on this show.
So we're going to hear a mouthful.
Well, he offered to be called, except that he's at least 2 hours behind us in time. He's somewhere east of Utah. He lost one time zone on yesterday, and he's probably going to lose at least another one today, but I decided we're going to leave him out of the show. But I will say he's driving a 2017, I believe, Jeep Grand Cherokee, and I mention it because it's a good test for maybe his report, but I'll give you his report to the moment, or to yesterday's call with him.
All right, because he has not been a huge fan.
Not generally, but he's driving a six-cylinder with an 8-speed transmission, and listeners to this show will know that I drive a Cherokee, which is a junior Grand Cherokee, junior to the Grand Cherokee, and a very good-sized vehicle for those who do not need bigness and heaviness. And it has a 9-speed transmission. So one of the questions I asked him was, does it ever get into eighth gear? Because as we know, the smaller the engine, even though they may have an 8 or 9-speed transmission, the more power it takes to push a vehicle at speeds in excess of 70 miles an hour, which he is traveling at, against the winds, whether they're natural winds blowing against you or whether it's the wind created because you're moving through the airstream and it sort of blocks you. And I have said that my 4-cylinder Cherokee rarely gets into ninth gear except when the air is calm outside, the road is almost pool table surface flat or going downhill. But when it does, the engine at 75 to 80 is turning well under 2,000 RPM, which is good for economy. And so he allowed us how most of the time he makes it to seventh gear pretty well. But an eighth is hard-pressed to reach or stay in unless it is a similar type of surface. And the V8 might get into it more easily if there was a V8, but he's driving a 6. He also notes that his mileage at 75 to 80 with the Grand Cherokee is running well below 20 miles per gallon, whereas I can say to this listening audience that my Cherokee, when I drove it to Little Rock, Arkansas, New Orleans, Atlanta, and back, I was able to get very close to between 28 and 30 miles per gallon per tank full most of the time, much of the time on that trip. And so there is an immediate 12-mile-per-gallon benefit of not needing a Grand Cherokee for long distance travel. He does say that the Grand Cherokee seats are very comfortable, good seat cushions. He says they are quite commodious in their platform, that is the seat cushions, seven, and he likes the seats quite well for long distance. He drove I believe his first day was roughly between 12 and 14 hours drive on his first day towards his return to the East Coast.
And I guess we should say, just for context, that Jay is not a big guy.
No, he's not. He's under 5'10".
Right.
And so he doesn't need a great big seat. But anyway, so he's having a good time. He'll probably report on this show in a week or so. And we'll move on. I'm going to move on to something you sent to me, which I opened this morning before coming to the broadcast booth. And it was about Sweden as installing, so I don't know whether you're going to call them self-charging, but charging, electric charging roads. They've got a test bed, a 1.2-mile road bed, and there was a video, which, thank you, was in that email. And they are experimenting with roads that will charge electric battery vehicles as you are driving them, so you would theoretically never need a charging station. However, I do not know what it's going to cost. It's cost them to build a 1.2-mile self-charging road, but I looked at the picture of the roadway, and it has what looks like a sub-surface rail right down the middle of the road, which we'll, I'll come to that in a second. And instead of it being wireless, there is a, looks like a magnetic or some kind of device that hangs down below the vehicle. In this case, they were all purposely built electric battery trucks. So they were actually large trucks, almost. They all looked in the video sort of like our state snowplow truck size trucks. And underneath it was a cable and a receptacle to receive the electricity from the self-charging world. It reminds me of streetcars.
Mm-hmm.
But they ran on overhead wires. This is a under an
is
in-surface
embedded?
Embedded. Well, it looked like a you could.
Or is it on top?
No, it's embedded, so it's flat, so you can plow it. And this particular video was done during a snowstorm, so there was snow falling on the roads. In any event, this device has to be in contact with the charging wiring rail. That is, it's like an electric. Actually, probably an electric train with electric rail that that powers it on electricity instead of diesel that we have in the States somewhere. But it was only 1.2 miles. It obviously would be very expensive to do the Massachusetts Turnpike, for example, or 684 to New York with one of these kinds of roads with a charging rail all the way from one end to the other.
But
also,
the
other thing
problem.
Is you've got three, you have three
lanes
or more in many of these multi-laned superhighways. And if you go out to pass a vehicle or something like that, your charger picks itself up off the ground as you make the passing maneuver. And then you've got to more or less maneuver your car over it so that this device will go drop down and come in contact with the charging rail.
But presumably you've got
lane.
Some except presumably you've got some mileage, you know. In other words, you start with a fully charged car, no?
Well, I don't know anything about that. It's basically saying it doesn't matter whether you start with a fully charged car or not. Theoretically you might be able to start with a fully charged car, but at some point all our electric pure electric cars now are coming on stream with mid 200 mile of range before you have to stop and recharge the
right.
batteries. Theoretically, this would eliminate that part of it.
Right.
It's too complex to think that it would show up on the U.S. roads anytime soon.
I know. I actually like
Sweden
the idea
wants
of it.
To electrify more of their roads in Sweden, but Sweden's a relatively small country.
But it's also very
which
advanced.
State does it fit in our country? Something, you know. So you don't drive very far in Sweden. So maybe it's a financial feasibly financially possible, but I don't know. But it was an interesting video. Thank you for sending it. And those listeners who may come in contact with a YouTube video of this in the future can see what it's all about. But then we go to a news item. Porsche plans a network of 500 fast chargers for U.S., well, this is the coming thing, everybody. The electric cars are coming towards us faster than we expected. And Porsche, VW, Mercedes, BMW, Jaguar are all coming out within 2 years. They will have all electric-only cars available for purchase in the United States.
So what's the fast charger? Because
so the fast charger allows you to charge 50 to 80% of a battery charge right now, of the batteries that are currently available, in probably between 15 and 30 minutes, which is too long for still intercontinental transport, in my opinion. And so the other thing is 500 chargers is a Porsche installation plan. VW is going to probably plan a similar program. So is General Motors. So all the manufacturers. And there will be, I hope, a universal plug application for these chargers.
That was the next question.
But it still will limit you from turning off an interstate road and going up a dead-end road valley in the mountains of California or Colorado or wherever there are national parks to go exploring
right.
just at a whim if you see a sign for a particular scenic outlook destination. You have to look down at your battery charge.
You probably
you have to know whether there's a charger up at the end of the Dead End Canyon, which probably won't be there many times soon. And not many people in electric cars are going to feel very comfortable once they start seeing their electric range down below half of its full capacity level.
I would love to know middle of the country, outside big urban areas view of it, you know, just in terms
of
cost.
I don't know what that'll all be about. In any event, electric charging stations are showing up. We've had one for Tesla in Salisbury for a long time. The dealerships that sell electric cars already have one or two charging stations at the dealerships because they have to keep their inventory charged for test drives. Plus, they will be available for, obviously, owners of those vehicles to come and charge if they're in a dealership location convenient to you, the owner. And as we know from our broadcast booth, the nearest General Motors dealership is in Millbrook, New York currently. And other than that, you have to go to Tarrington or there's not a General Motors dealership in Great Barrington anymore or Rhinebeck to start finding it. And those places are 20 to 35 miles away from us. So, of course, owners of electric vehicles will be installing their own charging station at their home.
They do
not have to do the high speed. They can plug it into a regular outlet, which should be installed, probably a dedicated circuit breaker line in their electric box in their garage so they can charge their car overnight at the 110 voltage rating as opposed to the 240 volt rating, which is the fast charging station, and they're going to be faster ones still. And battery technology is slowly evolving so that batteries will take flash charging much more quickly eventually. But whether they'll be the batteries that power these vehicles or not remains to be seen, although the technology is advancing along those lines.
God forbid the power goes out.
Now we want to go to self-driving cars because, you know, there have been a couple of situations. Our broadcast CBS station in our northwest corner is, I think, out of Hartford, and there's a reporter there whose name is Gail King, who was just on last week's show, had been out to California and had interviewed Elon Musk in quite an interesting situation, was in a Tesla vehicle riding with him as he was demonstrating the self-driving characteristic capabilities of the Tesla vehicle. One of the comments she made in her reporting on this, and this was over two or three news segments, I think last Friday morning, was that she was very nervous riding as a passenger in the Tesla with Elon Musk at the wheel, with no hands on the wheel, talking animatedly to her, waving his hands, for those who saw it, in the air as he was, you know, the car was moving along at whatever speed. And she said she was very nervous and would take her a long time to be able to get comfortable ever thinking that she could maybe drive in a car, a self-driving car in the driver's seat and let her hands be off the wheel, as I would be, and I would probably never do it. The other thing is that somebody noticed, and I cannot document that this is totally correct, somebody noticed that during the course of this segment, the car went through two stop signs apparently without stopping. Now, I do not know whether that is true or not.
It doesn't matter
so much except that theoretically it's supposed to see all that and act accordingly.
It's not just that. It's the whole, if you remember, you know, now first we had drinking and driving, then we have texting and driving. Every traffic report that you listen to ends with, doesn't matter whether it's major, ends with don't text and drive.
Correct.
You know, when you give human beings, you know, X number of tons of metal and then say, you don't have to pay any attention, you're sort of inviting a problem.
Well,
no.
Was it Uber or Waymo that just had that accident with the bicyclist in which the safety driver
that
was looking down at something in his lap?
No, she was.
It was a man test driver, and
Anyway, it was Uber, and it was very interesting because your co-host / sparring partner did have an interesting take on. We discussed it. I believe you were traveling at that time, but what was striking was he said the thing that no one is really talking about is that Uber's self-driving technology isn't as good as
That may well be true, but that's hogwash, because that's really not, that misses the point of the problem of when is our self-driving cars going to be deemed to be technologically safe enough to really be trustworthy at 110%, and they're never going to be. One argument in their favor is that they may well reduce the incidence of drivers of people being killed by cars by 90% over what currently is out there. All right, that is good, but is that going now? All the cars, I believe, have been taken off the road or not allowed to operate independently, self-driving since this particular incident occurred, and there's a lot of discussion about how much this self-driving stuff that's coming at us has been set back in terms of being allowed to happen on roads. We know, I believe Texas is allowing or was allowing self-driving cars. I believe Arizona was allowing self-driving cars to be tested on their roads. Uber took their cars off out of that context, I think, because it was clearly, I don't know whether if that person had been looking at the road, he might still not have been able to avoid hitting that particular person because of the distance. But the fact of the matter was, the camera looking at him showed him clearly not looking at the road in time to have possibly saved
an impact
of the car with the particular person. Anyways, it's been set back. And now there's an editorial on one of my magazines, Auto Week, who this guy has been talking about, been thinking lately about the future of driving, and he can't figure it out. First of all, I am echoing him on this show. As I've said before, I'll never probably want to own a self-driving car. Jay, conversely, thinks he would be quite comfortable owning a self-driving car. So you see, we at two ends of our table here, we have two different opinions of what our individual comfort levels might or might not be about a self-driving car being seen on roads around us. And would you really want to sit there and read a newspaper or otherwise not have to look at the road with your hands at the ready? If you've got to look at the road and keep your hands at the ready, and I think Cadillac's got this new thing where you, every 15 seconds, if you don't have your hands on the wheel.
What, you get an electric shock?
Well, and if you refuse to acknowledge the electric shock or whatever it is, the light, the flashing or the noise, the car will pull over and stop on the side of the road because it may think you're asleep.
Listen.
Even though it's got eyesight technology looking at the eyes to see whether or not your eyes are open or not.
Listen, when everyone was sitting around the room and said, hey, let's take all of everybody's information and put it in one place, I'm still wondering, and this was some time ago, why no one came into the room and said, guys? So I'm sort of, when I listen to this, it's like, yeah, great. This is all fantastic. Guys, what do you think is going to happen when you, again, you give someone X number of tons of metal and say, don't worry about a thing. You don't have to be responsible for this.
Well, I don't know. I'm also interested in what the insurance companies might do if you bought a car that has self-driving capability, whether your rates would go up, because they would be thinking about the liability factors of how do you prove whether the driver was at fault, the car was at fault, with the black box. And Tesla and the safety commission are now at war with each other about this latest crash because...
And this is a different crash.
It's a different crash. Yes, it is.
And that car had been in for several...
It got killed in it. And
that car had been in the shop several times for the same problem. But what's interesting is that the safety board is taking issue with Tesla releasing
information about what caused it, and he laid it on the driver, I believe, or said that the driver didn't have his hands on the wheel 6 seconds before, whatever it was. Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that it's just setting back this technology, setting back probably the likelihood of it being allowed on all states' public roads anytime soon, which is just fine with me.
Well, then there's also the ethical questions. It's like, okay, how do you program the car? If you see a dog, you know, a dog or a baby stroller, but the computer figures out that, let's just say there are questions.
The computer doesn't have it all figured out yet, and can you ever program absolutely every nuance or thing that
can happen? Can you program ethics into a computer?
Yeah. And probably the answer is not no easily. So we have Jaguar's got an I-Pace all-electric car, which will be available, I believe, in the U.S. towards the end of this year or early in 2019. Aston Martin was going to develop an electric car, but they're going to stick with gasoline only as far as the SUV goes. So there's an evolving decision-making policy going on manufacturer to manufacturer as to just how necessary it will be for them to have an electric car option available within 18 months versus maybe a 2 or 3 years. VW Group, Jaguar, Mercedes, and BMW are all roaring ahead with electric option vehicles, which one or two at least at each manufacturer will be available probably within 18 months in the U.S.
And when you were at the auto show, did you see examples of these?
Yes, I did. They weren't operating, although Toyota had a driving area for people to get in and ride around in a electric Toyota concept car, and I'm not sure what it was because I never saw it, but apparently it was there. And people were having a ride electric. But all you have to do is go to a Chevrolet dealer near you and go ask for to test drive a Bolt, a B-O-L-T, not a V-O-L-T. And it's a very wonderful car. I reported on it a few shows ago. I went and test drove it. It would be very practical around here. We could go to New York and back and not worry too much starting out in the morning.
Is that all electric?
You couldn't do a side trip. Yeah, it's all electric, only electric. No gasoline generator, engine, or other alternative means of transportation. The Nissan Leaf is out, we know. Its range has been a little bit too short to feel comfortable. The Bolt, I believe, has a 283-mile range average available power, which is plenty to get to New York and back without too much side tripping to go shopping en route, unless there was a charging station. Now, if you got shopping and there's a charging station where you shop, I would tell you that you're probably pretty reliably going to be okay as far as as you can plug the car in while you're shopping, because you'll be shopping for an hour and you'll get enough charge.
Right. And what about massive tailbacks or traffic
massive
jams?
What?
Tailback, traffic jams.
Well, an interesting situation. When your car is more or less crawling along, you're probably using very little juice. However, if you've got the radio on and you've got the air conditioning on, you will be using more than a little juice. And if you are in a traffic jam, as has been known to happen on the Mass Turnpike, and I was in one for 10 miles, or 684, I was in one for 10 miles in my hybrid Sonata recently, and I was also at a customs booth between Canada and the U.S. for 2.5 hours, and my engine went on and off during that 2.5 hours, charging the batteries, which were running my radio and the air conditioning system at the customs or on the highway. And, you want to have that extra power boost of a gasoline motor for the time being if you're doing any amount of long-distance driving. I guess that's about it for this show. Dealers are now offering care packages with all their sales because they want to bring you back to their dealership for service, and they also want you to develop a loyalty factor, which I have with my Sonata, for example. I haven't paid for one service in the 3 years I've owned my Sonata because I bought a service package. So I go religiously to my Sonata dealer. And we'll probably do so for the life of the car. And the dealership has been terrific. And I'll probably buy another Hyundai if I'm still alive.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.